This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. After years of delinquency, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice says his family company's overdue taxes and fines in the state have been cleared. But Justice offered no information on millions owed in Kentucky and other states. Dave Mistich of West Virginia Public Broadcasting reports.
West Virginia revenue officials say the debt obligations from Justice's coal companies have been paid, including fines and taxes. Justice failed to say how much was owed and whether any of the amounts paid were reduced as part of negotiations. The billionaire businessman turned governor blamed the tax burden on a Russian company that bought mining interests from Justice in 2009 and then sold them back to him in 2015. He says that company didn't pay taxes. But past reporting by NPR, Ohio Valley Resource and Mine Safety and Health News found that Justice's companies owed $15 million in taxes and fines in West Virginia and five other states. The October 2016 report showed those companies owed $4.71 million in West Virginia. Justice promised to pay remaining obligations soon, but was not specific as to when. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown, West Virginia.
The global market for recycling has changed dramatically over the last year, and it's already trickling down to what happens curbside. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel has more.
If you're like me, the recycling you drag to the curb outside your house for pickup includes cans, sales flyers, soda bottles, yogurt tubs, and the clamshells that raspberries and strawberries are packaged in. I put a lot of those in the blue bin. But that's about to change.
For us, it's business as usual. We're taking everything today that we took last year.
That's Sean Weigel, Program Supervisor of Environmental Services for the City of Pittsburgh. He means the usual glass, paper, metal cans, and plastics with the numbers 1 through 5 and 7 on the container. You know, the number inside the little triangle. But
the numbers, we're going to be probably getting away from those in the near future. They're just confusing.
That's because not all plastic is created equal. The number on the bottom of that strawberry container is number 1. That's PET, or polyethylene terephthalate. It's also a type of plastic soda and water bottles are made from. But those bottles are a lot more valuable than food containers. Bottles can be cleaned and melted down to make more bottles, or other products like carpets or park benches. That's not what happens to many other shapes and numbers of plastics. Erica Young and I are wearing hard hats and watching a parade of bottles and bags. They're moving on a belt from a pile three times our height to a platform where they're sorted by hand.
These bays here below the line are our residue bays, so all of that material in there is going to end up at the landfill.
We're just outside of the tipping floor of Waste Management's MRF, or Materials Recovery Facility, on Neville Island near Pittsburgh. 10,000 tons of material come through here each month. They have recycling contracts with businesses and municipalities in the region. Workers pick out stuff that could hurt the machines, materials that can't be recycled, like garden hoses. We even see a bowling ball.
Your strawberry clamshells might not be in this refuse pile, but before they get to the end baling, they will probably end up in a refuse pile.
Young says later on down the line, the cardboard and paper material are sorted with a sizing screen. The paper rolls over the top because it's flat, but those flimsy plastic berry containers also fold flat.
So it's going to roll over top and it eventually could end up with the paper as well.
She says that's contamination. Until last year, a lot of plastic and paper recycling was sold from facilities like this one to China. But at the beginning of the year, China stopped importing most plastic waste and mixed paper, like junk mail. It has its own trash problems, and China will only accept a prohibitively low amount of contamination in the materials it still takes. That leaves sorting facilities with few options.
If we don't have a market to sell this material to, it essentially isn't a recyclable.
So strawberry containers and yogurt cups have to come out of the waste stream. Even glass has a contamination problem, because in a single stream facility, bottle caps and other small items get mixed up with it. Young says Waste Management is trying to get the word out to its customers, those municipalities, that it really only wants paper, cans, and those plastic jars, jugs, and bottles with a narrower top, which they can still sell. Anne Germain is with the National Waste and Recycling Association.
We understand why China is doing this, but the timeline that they set for it was so short, it didn't allow for alternative markets to develop.
Germain says even the alternative markets in Asia, Vietnam and Thailand, are turning away foreign recycling because they're overwhelmed with the surplus. And building similar facilities in the U.S. will take time and investment. Justin Stockdale is Western Regional Director of Pennsylvania Resources Council, a statewide environmental group. He says he doesn't want people to be discouraged by all of this. Stockdale says recycling still works, but it's a commodity, not just a way to deal with our trash.
And I think we need to think about this as an opportunity to get it right and to do better.
And as Stockdale reminds me, recycling is only one of the R's. Reduce and reuse are even more critical now, while the world market is in flux. So I could go to the farmer's market with my own container to buy strawberries, or get creative with how to reuse that plastic clamshell. I'm taking suggestions. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is produced in Pittsburgh and reports on the environment. More at AlleghenyFront.org. The latest episode of Inside Appalachia features a report from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting that explores the life of a non-denominational pastor and Kentucky politician, Danny Ray Johnson. The investigation, which won several awards, including a Peabody, exposes a long line of questionable actions that led up to his rise to power. A few days after the report was released, Johnson killed himself. Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly spoke with the reporters R.G. Dunlop and Jake O'Brien about their investigation. Here's a segment of that interview.
So do you all have any thoughts about his statements about the media and also criticizing the media?
Not only Mr. Johnson, but his widow, Rebecca Johnson, even more so, I think, made statements, very negative statements about the media following his death. I don't think any of his assertions or hers had any merit, but they really weren't interested in discussion or debate. They just wanted to try to take somebody down and to tarnish people without any factual basis whatsoever. And we saw a lot of that and heard a lot of that with her. And, you know, you can say it, but there's no evidence. There's not a shred of evidence. He killed himself, period. And we did our job, and we think we did it well. And neither she nor anybody else has produced any evidence whatsoever that suggests we were unfair or untruthful. So I'm very comfortable with what we did. And I think their criticisms of our work are wholly unfounded.
And also to the point of the fake news point, I think that not just Dan Johnson, but other people who, you know, clamor about fake news, oftentimes I think we've seen that the phrase fake news is meant to discredit legitimate reporting that is just not favorable to the person that's being reported upon. But
don't like it.
Yeah, they don't like it, so they call it fake news, which is so easy for them to do, but it's damaging to this entire industry and to the stuff that we do and you do every single day.
You presented factual information in your reports, obviously, and you also made some seemingly observational statements and, well, called Dan Johnson a liar. Was there any discussion around this type of strong language, as you put it in the piece?
Yes, a great deal of discussion among us, between Jake and me, Jake and I and our editors, and also lawyers at the table. These stories were lawyered exhaustively, literally pretty much line by line. Story up on a screen, we're going through the wording. And so there was a lot of careful thought given to what we can say and whether we have support for what we're saying. And we thought the evidence clearly supported the characterization of Mr. Johnson as a liar because he repeatedly said things that weren't true.
Reporters R.G. Dunlop and Jake O'Brien with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, speaking with Jessica Lilly about their series called The Pope's Long Con. Hear this and more on the latest Inside Appalachia podcast. Find it at wvpublic.org. Owning a dog is said to improve self-esteem. Man's best friend can improve social lives, make us less lonely, and even keep us active. In our next installment of our summer series, Outside in Appalachia, health reporter and dog lover Kara Lofton explores how to safely enjoy outdoor recreation to maximize the physical and mental benefits of pet ownership, as well as explore local natural resources.
Moosey, come here.
Full disclosure, I am the proud millennial dog mom of four. Yes, you heard that right. Four dogs who absolutely love camping, hiking, and getting outside. So while working on this summer series, this idea of enjoying outdoor recreation with dogs seemed like a natural story. After all, studies have found that American millennials lead the country in pet ownership, fueling the $69 billion pet industry, an industry that has grown three times since the mid-90s. Which could be a good thing for our health. Recent studies have found that dog ownership is linked to everything from reducing allergies to counteracting negativity. A 2017 study of older adults found that dog owners are more active than those without, walking about 22 minutes more a day compared to non-dog owners. And walking is not only good for your mental and physical health, but also often gets you outside. And as we've explored earlier in the series, getting into nature has significant mental health benefits. Okay. By now, you might be thinking, great, I get it. Getting outside with pets is good. But the big question is, how do you do so safely?
Our pets, as a general rule, will do anything we ask them to.
That's Dr. Mark Freeman, an assistant professor of veterinary medicine at Virginia Tech.
And they will play as long as we ask them to play. They will continue trying as long as we keep asking them to keep trying. So it's very easy for a pet to become overheated and to become exhausted because their number one goal in life is to please us and make us happy. And as long as we keep throwing that frisbee, they're going to keep chasing it, even to the point of complete exhaustion.
Good job, Bug!
Good job, Bug!
Did you get it?
The biggest problem in the summer, he says, is heat exhaustion. Dogs, as you know, cool themselves by panting. Panting evaporates saliva, which cools the blood supply.
In the summertime, when it's hot, and especially when the humidity is high, that evaporation component doesn't occur. So they pant and pant, but there's no evaporation, so they don't actually cool themselves. So it's really important in the summer when the temperatures are high, when the humidity's high, that animals have access to shade, that they have access to lots and lots of fresh water.
This is particularly important, he says, for dogs with short faces like pugs, bulldogs, and certain pit bull breeds. The shorter snouts mean less effective cooling, and these dogs are even more likely to overheat. Johnny Warner is a Charleston-based vet. He says his biggest concern is not just dogs being too active, but the time between periods of activity, particularly leaving dogs in the car while you just run into the store for something or grab a bite to eat.
If you're doing outdoor recreation with your dog, you're likely getting there in a car. And the obvious one is just never leave your dog unattended in a closed car for any amount of time.
According to the American Veterinary and Medical Association, temperatures in a closed car can rise 19 degrees in the first 10 minutes. So, if the outside temperature is 70, they can rise to 89. If they start at 90, 109. And the more time that passes, the higher they rise. The other thing dramatically affected by rising temperatures is pavement. Freeman again.
And seeing really severe burns on the pads of the feet is not at all uncommon in the summer.
Which should be an incentive for you to stay off urban roads and get out to explore natural areas with your pet, such as parks, forest, and wooded paths. So, even though you might have to take some precautions to keep your best friend safe, science says it's worth it. And you never know, you might just improve your own health in the process. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.